Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Tuesday, January 24th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. This is going to be a podcast focusing on some recruiting, starting with Justin Scott, the five-star defensive lineman from Chicago that will be making a visit to Notre Dame here this weekend with the expected announcement of his commitment beginning next week, which seems to bode well. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about a little bit more basketball than normal because of Mike Bray's announcement on Friday that he will be stepping down upon the conclusion of the 22-23 season. We'll talk a little bit about candidates, but mostly we'll talk about football and not just recruiting, but present day football, current roster. We'll get to that with Burning Up the Boards in segment two. But let's start with Justin Scott, the five-star defensive tackle, nose tackle. He could play strong side end if he wanted. He probably wouldn't put him at the Viper, but he can play anywhere in there. And I think that if he reaches his full potential, I look at him as a 4.5-star player with 5-star potential. If he reaches his potential, he's a difference maker for Notre Dame, a significant difference maker in the middle of the defensive line.
He also feels, and this is exacerbated by the loss of the 5 stars they had on board going into the cycle last year. It just feels like the must get of the cycle, the must get, the must keep. And the most important thing you said, Tim, is that positional versatility. If you can play nose and strong side defensive end in the modern era, I shouldn't even say the modern era, in the last 30 years of college football, that's a very big deal.
Yeah, and let me insert that, you know, we're hearing more and more talk about Notre Dame playing more 3-3-5, which would make a Justin Scott that much more valuable, I think, with position versatility there. And we'll talk about that in a second segment. But, Pete, I know you've had a chance to look at Justin Scott and probably find a few things out about him. What are your impressions?
I mean, he's the kind of kid that you see at Georgia and Alabama, and Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of those kind of kids on the defensive line in terms of like the agility at that size is really unique. And I realize the competition level is not elite for him around sort of Chicago and some of the private schools that he plays against. But if you can move at that size, that really should translate to college. And like, look, Notre Dame needs, I mean, they need multiple Justin Scotts, but you gotta get a first one. And so to get him as the first one, I think would be really significant. It's sort of a, you know, if you can hold on to him, obviously, but like that would be a very significant show of recruiting intent about where the entire recruiting operation at Notre Dame can go.
For old timers like myself, it's weird to hear about Chicago Catholic high schools not being the greatest of competition, because when I broke into the business, it absolutely was. And Jerry Faust was recruiting in that area, and Lou Holtz, and Notre Dame had a lot of success. Not in every case, but had a lot of success with mining those Catholic schools, and it has changed. And Justin Scott is at St. Ignatius. But, you know, again, us in the business that look at film over and over and over again, you have to be able to separate competition from the player that you're looking at. And certainly competition is very important. The size of opponents many times, you know, may skew exactly how good a prospect is. But when you see the size of this guy and the mobility, and I just really think that, you know, he's a very, very, very good football player right now, but I think there's a higher upside for him. And that's what's so exciting. And, you know, we are seeing, I think I may have mentioned this last week, I know that Kevin Sinclair has brought it to our attention, to everybody's attention. Look at the size of the defensive lineman that Notre Dame is recruiting. It's a larger, bigger athlete. Number one, you need that if you're in a 4-man front or a 3-man front. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But if you do play more 3-man fronts, it is especially important that you play bigger up along the defensive line. And this dude, he has the size. I think he can be, you know, I think he can fine-tune his conditioning a little bit better. And when he does that, combined with just the natural size, we're going to see a great player. Whether he ends up in Notre Dame or not, he's not verbally committed. We'll find out about that. I want to talk about verbal commitments and the concern that people have about maintaining him, whether we do that in this segment or with a question in segment two. I will want to talk about that a little bit. But, Tim, any further thoughts on Justin Scott?
I was about to hit a segue that we may have to table for 9 months. Do you think this little bit, and that I'd kind of heard separately too, and the 3-3-5 look, there was a lot of it anyway. There's a lot more nickel going on. Can that happen in 2023 though?
Can it happen in 2023? Yeah. Because you're concerned about the size of Notre Dame?
I'm concerned about the size of the three.
I think, I wouldn't expect a full blown conversion to that.
Right.
I wouldn't, I personally, and again, this is probably my age speaking. I mean, I've always preferred a four-man front because I want to stop the run first and foremost. And we have seen you see at times where 3-3-5s get gashed a little bit in the running game. And that's always a bit of a concern. We may be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
They're definitely recruiting towards it though. I mean, I think
there's no doubt. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Kevin Sinclair has pointed this out and written about it, that just look at the size of these guys. And frankly, that's one of my concerns when I look at Jared Smith, who is projected to end up at Notre Dame with his brother Jacob, because I think Jared Smith is Jason Adamolola-like. And if you go to a three-man front, that's a little bit concerning. We love Jason Adamolola in his game. Just the sheer size that is needed up front, especially if you're going to play more three down.
Does it not to go another sidetrack away, but seem odd that like they're recruiting as many defensive linemen they are if they plan to take one off the field?
You got to get a bunch and you're going to lose some along the way, and you need it is the position now where you need more bodies than any other position, right?
It's a position where you play the fewest percentage of the snaps available in a game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You could bring in nine. You can bring in nine. Three won't be any good. Two are going to leave. And now all of a sudden you need to bring in more. Yeah. that's the issue.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you know, I mean, a lot of we've seen in recent years, I don't know that we ever really expected to see it under Brian Kelly and Mike Elston, but they started going three deep at positions along the defensive line. And it definitely worked in their favor. And I think, you know, across the board, the size, the speed, the impact, you have to have more bodies because the collisions are so great now, especially up front, snap after snap, concussions, those kind of things. You need more bodies, you need bigger bodies, and it's going in that direction. I wrote on our cheat sheet here about the portal closing, but I think inevitably we come back in every podcast to talk about what still needs to be done for Notre Dame when the portal reopens on May 1st. You know, we're going to talk about these guys, and maybe some of these guys, maybe Notre Dame looks at some of the younger guys and says, you know what, we're going to be ready to play with them. But maybe when the portal reopens, Notre Dame has to revisit, up front in addition to Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Addition from Ohio State.
I think that, I mean, we talked about this probably on our last pod. They got to find a Chris Smith plus. Like, if they just got that, I think that they would have a very successful portal season. Because I think it's basically a very, very good portal season based on Sam Hartman by himself. But you can get that to go with Jean-Baptiste, Thomas Harper, Caleb Smith, like just one Power Five level interior defensive lineman. It doesn't need to necessarily be a nose, doesn't necessarily be a three technique. It just got to be an interior guy. I think Notre Dame would be thrilled with that.
A 300 pound plus.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Not like all, like I, we all like Howard Cross's game. That's not what they needed. The portal on the interior.
No, they needed Braden Fisk, a 6'5", 300 pound dude that you could move around and play really, really play outside in addition to inside.
And you make Howard Cross much better by adding Chris Smith plus to the roster for 12 games. That makes Howard Cross way more effective if you have Chris Smith plus.
And like, I mean, you know, we look back on the season and, you don't really look at Chris Smith as playing a hugely significant role, but I think that's a good point, Tim, in that every snap that Smith took gave Howard Cross an opportunity to be stronger come fourth quarter. Right. He was pretty damn good throughout most of the season. All right, because we're talking interior defensive line, and to your point, Pete, that they need another guy like that, it could be a nose tackle that's already on the roster, whose name we have been mispronouncing the entire time. And as I said to Samson before we started recording, to quote from Animal House, not exactly a quote from Animal House, but you effed up. You trusted me. You trusted my pronunciation of Aiden Kiana Aina, which I have been, I'm not going to say the old way because I have to keep saying it. Ui Ungalale, Ui Ungalale. Kiana Aina. Aiden Kiana.
Not anymore. He's gone. He's not coming back.
He's got, I saw him in the strength and conditioning video, and we expect him to. He's in class. We expect him to.
No, I meant Ui Ungalale is gone.
Yeah. That's right.
We'll see in the Fiesta Bowl next year, O'Malley. Notre Dame or Oregon State.
Yeah, Notre Dame's going to play him in a bowl game. Then we'll have to. So, well, I got that one down, but yeah. Kiana Aina is one that I'm still working on. I claimed foul. I thought that was the pronunciation that I saw from Kiana Aina's Twitter account. We all know that we pronounced the Adam Alola's wrong because we believed Kurt Heinisch. And
he might have just been trolling us now that you think about it.
We messed. Yeah. Probably true. Probably true. We messed that up and we messed Kiana Aina, but I think we got it down. I think the lesson here is that just go ahead and pronounce the name the way it looks generally. I mean, that I think Kiana Aina is kind of how it looks, isn't it?
It is, although it was never Tagovailoa, so something to file away. No,
that's true. Well, that's the N and G, the N placed before G, exception to the rule. We should be used to that with our crazy English language. We're going to have to know how to say Boubacar Triore, is that right, Pete?
That's up to you.
Triore. Yeah,
you're fine for 2 years until you get corrected on it, and then we'll
Triore.
Be
it's Christophic, not Christophic. It's Kevin Bauman, not Bauman. It's Aiden Gobira. We're working on it.
Jagasaw, not Jagusa.
Jagasaw. Generally, by the time the guys graduate, we finally get it right. So anyway, my point being, Kiana Aina, can't he be the big guy in the middle of the defensive line? He's not 6'5", but he's a 300-pounder, and he's strong. And as I've said many times, he won a job in goal line a couple years ago before he blew out his knee.
Yeah, and he beat out, or he was ahead of, Rubio going in before he blew out his knee. He hurt his ankle when he broke his ankle when he won the goal line job back in August a year ago. Yeah.
Yes.
And if people are wondering why we're talking about this, we were told that he was told he's just not going to be, he doesn't have a spot on the team possibly next year. Shocking to both of us, or to all three of us, right? Because we think, if I am trying to figure out what I need on my team and I have that guy sitting there and I look at my glaring hole, that's the last guy I think might be expendable for Notre Dame football team going into an offseason. He's player 85. Are you kidding
me? Yeah, we just talked about how many defensive linemen you need.
Right. And we're going to talk more about D-line. I mean, we're going to talk about this. You know how this goes. I mean, we're going to talk about it up to and through the season. We have a great question in segment two, of which I have no answers for, which makes it a great question, I believe. But let's we'll get back to that. Let's move. I do want to get to, now that we got the pronunciation of Kiana Aina, see how I keep saying it, just so
everybody else down too. We're good.
Yeah. And you know, most of them don't really care, I'm sure. But you know, Aiden, they can just say Aiden. We have to actually say it publicly. But I do want to wrap up this segment with Mike Bray. And we found out on Thursday, the South Bend Tribune, Tom Noy found out on Thursday that Bray was going to announce his resignation, not retirement, that he would step down from the Notre Dame position upon the conclusion of the season. And then Bray made it official on Friday. We had a lot of fun with him. He joked that the only way he could get an interview done in Notre Dame football stadium interview room was to step down after 23 years as head coach at Notre Dame. We all love Mike Bray, the person, but I've said several times, I believe he's a very self-aware person. And some of the things that he said on that day indicated that. He pointed out 12 NCAA tournament appearances in his first 17 years. One in the last six. He was asked why now, and that was one of the reasons that he gave, and that's self-aware. It's not happening anymore, and the roster is going to need complete reconstruction going into next year, with hopefully Bray assisting in keeping that really good, solid, good freshman class with the potential that it has.
Yeah, you know, I think he has probably done 50% of what he needs to do to keep them. When he mentioned telling their families, look, show some patience here. Find out who the next coach is. Talk to the next coach. Voice your concerns to me, but don't make a rash decision. Don't just go somewhere. But that's all. I mean, that's about it, Tim. Once we hit Notre Dame has a new coach, Mike Bray doesn't need to consult his ex-players that much. I think it was a nice sentiment that he's going to help out and do all. And I think that's great. But as soon as there's a new coach in place, it is no longer Mike Bray's program. It's got to be that way.
No doubt. But as long as he has taken, and that's why I asked him that after the game. I mean, you needed Mike Bray to take the initial steps with J.J. Starling and Van Allen Lubin and Dom Campbell too. I mean, Dom Campbell needs some work conditioning wise, but man, I mean, that's the big body that actually needs to get on the floor more. And I asked about Van Allen Lubin. He played 6 minutes in the second half. The kid had four of the team's seven offensive rebounds. I think there's more danger of losing Van Allen Lubin than there is J.J. Starling at this point. Pete, what's your perspective?
I thought Bray, I agree with his self-awareness. He's out of gas. I think he's probably been out of gas for a little bit. You know, in some ways, I feel like last season was like on fumes. But like it ended so well, like no one likes to walk away that way. You're like, oh, I gotta keep going. You know, and then Ed, I mean, you guys have been to more games than I have this year, but like watching him on the sidelines, I don't see a coach who's like fired up, motivational in a way that I remember early Bray or mid Bray. And that's, it's just a coach who I think is out of gas and he knows it. You know, when I asked him, you know, this job's changed, but the sports changed. So like what traits does the next coach need to have? I mean, he said energy, energy, energy. Like, and I just think that Bray for being an energy giver for most of his career, I just don't think he has a lot left, which is totally fine after 23 years. That's not a criticism, but they need an influx of energy from whoever the next coach is. You guys have some thoughts on kind of where Notre Dame may be going there.
It's a shame. Tim, I'm sorry. I don't blame Mike Bray for not retiring after that run last year, because I think he got rejuvenated by that super fun week of basketball, double overtime to remain in the tournament, an upset of Power 5 team in Alabama that's, 11 and a 6 seed. Had Texas Tech close to the point where maybe you make one or two adjustments and you're able to beat Texas Tech in that game and go to the Sweet 16. I actually, the way he mentioned flying home on the plane, he thought about maybe hanging it up, but he had so many guys coming back. I wonder if he'd have hung it up if they made the Sweet 16. If you would have felt like, all right, man, I just maxed everything out right here.
Yeah.
And honestly, though, had he done that, this is playing fantasy basketball right now. There's no way Nate Leschetsky comes back for another year if Mike Bray leaves. I don't know what happens with guys like Goodwin and Ryan would probably come back as they had found their footing. It would have been a different team. It would be a whole different situation. And it's an absolutely stunning 1 year pause on the basketball program that I did not see coming. The worst case scenario for me this year going into the year was struggle to get into the NCAA tournament because the ACC stinks, but you get in anyway and you're exposed in the first round. And that's an ugly end to it. That's, you imagine that instead of this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we all expected that next season would be or upon the conclusion of this season. And, you know, we've talked about the loss of Atkinson, the athleticism that Wesley brought to it. And I personally have not given enough credence to losing Prentice Hubb, who, for as wild and crazy as we perceived him to be playing at times, he ran the offense, and now we see that the offense is dysfunctional as well. I did, in watching the Duke Virginia Tech game last night, I kind of forgot that Grant Basile was playing for Virginia Tech, and Notre Dame was in on him as a transfer, and that kid's a good player. What I wonder, I'm not saying one player could have changed 1-8 in the ACC. Is that what it is? 1-8 or 1-9?
Yeah, 1-8.
And that, to your point, Pete, about
give it 10 hours.
Yeah. the lack of energy. As a former coach, I had a bad year in there. It's hard to motivate when you're going so poorly. You know, you reach a point where, you know, you're kind of pounding your head against the wall, motivating when you know that, man, I've done that already and it didn't work. And so that's part of it, but I do think that he's lacking a little bit of juice right now. But Grant Basile is a good player, and I wonder if he was on this team and would have given them an inside presence, they wouldn't be 1-8. I mean, they lost a couple 1-point games. They'd probably be more like, I don't want to overstate it, 3-6, 4-5, and then it wouldn't be as, then he, if you were 4-5, even at 3-6, you know, Brace made runs before where,
it's 4-5. You can make that run.
They bring it, they pull it together, and they have a great run to end the season. But that didn't happen. Basile chose Virginia Tech, who now is only 2-7 themselves in the conference. They're having a poor year, which is a little harder to explain, I believe, based upon their roster. But anyway, that's where we are with Mike Bray. I think we, I kind of bumped into him in the hallway in while I was writing my post game, and had a chance to express to him what he means to me. I think he's a great dude and has been really good to us and everybody in the media pretty much, but it was time. And so we'll talk more about him, but certainly much more football in the second segment. But at the end of this second segment, we'll throw out some more names as possibilities to replace Mike Bray. Segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
This is Mike Brown, former Notre Dame Leprechaun, here to share the Leprechaun's Game Day at Notre Dame, an officially licensed children's book that celebrates the magic of a football Saturday at Notre Dame. Follow me on an adventure from Step Off Under the Golden Dome to ND Stadium with this perfect gift for Fighting Irish fans. Visit www.lepgameday.com and enter Irish to get your author signed copy today. Go Irish!
Here's another Irish tale from Dublin at dudublin.ie.
In 1916, Irish rebel forces have taken up position on the north side of Dublin's St. Stephen's Green Park. They exchange fire with the British to the south. Suddenly, a man enters the park with a brown bag above his head. Both sides cease fire. The park's groundskeeper has come to feed the ducks. For the next 6 days, there is a daily ceasefire so the ducks can be fed. Learn more when you do Dublin with Do Dublin Tours.
Segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question is from ND from NJ3. All signs point to Justin Scott committing to Notre Dame. After what transpired with the previous 3 5-star recruits, what should make us confident about the commitment not taking a turn this early before signing day?
It's a legitimate question, and I think something that we've all considered at some point. But when you look at it a little bit beyond the surface, I think you have to treat each situation on its own merit. And the fact that Justin Scott is a 5-star player does put a different slant on it. It's different than 4-star guys. I admit that, but I do think that there are some things working in Notre Dame's favor here. The proximity of Chicago to Notre Dame and him being a Midwest kid and a Midwest family, I think, you know, plays a significant role or should play a significant role here. And when you compare it to a Keon Keeley from Florida and a Peyton Bowen from Texas and a Dante Moore, whose team Moore was going to leverage every single opportunity that came up on every single day of recruiting in order to benefit Dante Moore and the family as much as they possibly could. So, I mean, there's some dynamics here that I think are completely different. I get the whole 5-star correlation, and there is a difference between maintaining a 5-star and a 4-star just because of NIL and the amount of interest that a player of that caliber generates. But I do think that having said all that and guaranteeing absolutely nothing, 10 plus months in advance. You know, Notre Dame, if they win this battle, it's better than the alternative. I know a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to care until he signs. Well, that's kind of silly, isn't it? Because I mean, most of the guys that commit sign. And I think that if they get Justin Scott to commit, I think Notre Dame's going to feel a lot better about their opportunity to hold on to him than they have some of the recent guys.
A couple of things. One, we heard Dante Moore wanted to stay in the Midwest family, yada, yada. So it's like the local proximity, I think, matters a lot less than maybe it used to with NIL and just how national the sport is. But two, even though they lost Keon Keeley and Peyton Bowen, I feel like Notre Dame got a lot of mileage out of them in the sense of like Notre Dame had a top five class the entire cycle. We spent a lot of time talking about Marcus Freeman's recruiting acumen, and prospects notice. They notice who's in the top five, even though it sort of stumbled at the end. You're better to have had Keon Keeley for 6 months, 9 months, 12 months than if he had just committed to Alabama in the first place. I'm not saying that makes up for it or anything, but I'm just saying that there is value in a verbal commitment sometimes, even if they don't turn into a signee later.
I think Notre Dame is also better equipped to handle the NIL landscape with a five-star going into the Justin Scott retention than they were last year with everybody else. You learn from those things. There's more opportunities there. There's more money there. And it's still 10 months. You could be nervous all you want. You should be. It's 10 months away from signing day. Notre Dame has, first of all, Notre Dame needs to play pretty well, right? Justin Scott coming to Notre Dame if they're 8-4.
Yeah.
And they lose to Central Michigan and USC and Ohio State. Probably not.
Yeah, no doubt. I think both you guys are making great points. There is, to your point, Pete, I think there is great utility in Keeley and Boeing being committed to Notre Dame at some point. Hey, you had to start, like Notre Dame wasn't getting five-star commitments, generally speaking, under Brian Kelly. And so it has that part. You can't get a commitment. I mean, you can't get a signing until you get a commitment from a five-star guy. And so I agree with that. And Tim, I agree with you in terms of where Notre Dame is now NIL and where they were a year ago. I think Pete, wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, completely different plane from where they were a year ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, and they have sort of proof of concept that they can go to recruits and be like, look, we have fund. It's basically a kind of a universal income for every scholarship player on the roster. Here's how this worked for them. Also, we have the Kyle Hamilton experience, the Michael Mayer experience. I believe Tyler Buckner has done well with NIL stuff. Like, they have sort of proof of everybody gets something, and if you're a stud, you can get a lot. Just having more of that in play, I think, makes a difference. And, like, you know, if Justin Scott's being recruited by Florida, you can be like, look at that tire fire down there with NIL. Like, other schools are sort of struggling with it a little bit, whereas I think Notre Dame has now a little bit of like proof of concept that they can show in recruiting.
And another thing, and maybe this is minor compared to everything we said there, but that's why when the comment is made that it's a meaningless bowl, that was a meaningless win for Notre Dame in the Gator Bowl. I don't believe that. The tone setting that occurs with a loss in a bowl game and a win in a bowl game, especially in the manner that one transpired, I think is huge, and it carries over. There's a completely different look at our message board. Think how much complaining there would be about the Gator Bowl if Notre Dame continued to play that game like they did in the first half. That would still be at the forefront of everything that we talked about. So it sets a tone. I would add that to the mix as well. But Tim, you're right as well. 8-4.
Yeah, can't do that. Gotta be better. Obviously, people know that though. They don't want to say it out loud. But you can't go 8-4 again if you're Marcus Freeman next year. No, I'm sorry, but that's not a lot.
You know, and I realize the Notre Dame has dominated the ACC in the regular season, but you look at that schedule and it's different than it's.
But you got to be. You're Notre Dame. You can be better than 8-4 in your second year.
Absolutely, absolutely. You have to be. If we're gonna talk about getting the Justin Scotts of the world, you have to be. Question from Donnelly 3434. Would Javonte Jean-Baptiste primarily primarily a rush end, Junior Tuihalamaka getting work at Viper, and Riley Mills clearly better suited inside. It seems like there's a void at big end. Nano Safamensa seems like he's ready for a larger role, but is Alexander Ahrensberger? How about Aiden Gobira? Does big end depth arrive from the portal? And do we know if Tuihalamaka's move to Viper is permanent? A lot of questions in there, boys.
Well, yeah, a lot of questions. The Tuihalamaka thing, I just want to touch on again for people that haven't heard it. We first heard about that. Pete, you mentioned it to me during an August, the famous August scrimmage where Buckner didn't throw a pass, but he was reported for throwing amazing passes for other places. The famous scrimmage where Braden Lindsay made the catch from Drew Pine. Tuihalamaka rushed Drew Pine. I said, holy cow, that looked good. And Pete Sampson said, I've heard he's going to be a Viper. That was in August. So I don't know if the move is permanent, but I have considered him a Viper for 6 months. So in my mind, it's permanent. Aiden Gobira seems a year away from playing a big end role. If you're talking about going better than 9-4 or 8-4, right?
Yes.
I don't see Aiden Gobira as a big end yet. I know Kevin Sinclair thinks he'll be a big end, but he's not going to be he's not a number two big end at Notre Dame yet if you're going to be a top 12 team.
No. And on Tuihalamaka, we asked him, do you consider yourself a Viper? And he said yes. So I think that he kind of thinks that's where he's going to align. Alexander Ahrensberger, could he be your number two big end, which probably is your number eight over maybe your number nine defensive lineman? Probably.
Yeah, I'd love him to be my 2B. Wouldn't you like that? You got a 1, a 2A, and a 2B. Right now they have a 2.
Yeah, you'd like somebody else in addition, but Ahrensberger is somebody who would have value for you as a reserve guy who's just been in the program long enough and is strong enough to hold the point of attack. So
yeah, he's a senior going to he'll be multiple years of eligibility left, but he is a senior
with 3 years, really
three, right? With 3 years left. Yeah, right.
3 years left. Great question. I'm not sure that I have an answer for any of them, which is what makes it a great question. I mean, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about Jean-Baptiste being a strong side end. At this point, I think it was LT Irish on our message board made some really good points on why he believes that's going to happen. And so at this point, I'm not doubting that. My point is that's his second best position.
Yeah, I think easily point to a reason why it should happen because they don't have anybody else.
I think the big end position would be Jean-Baptiste's second best position. Okay, so be it. Tuihalamaka, yeah, I think long-term, I don't think that he has the typical length that you want, but I do think that he has. I think the main thing that Tuihalamaka brings to the Viper end is the ability to stop the run. I mean, I think he's better equipped to do that than Botello. I think he's better equipped to do that than Jean-Baptiste if he ends up on that side. Mills clearly better suited inside. Still not sure that they have the luxury to just go ahead and do that. Ahrensberger, I do think, can be a number two big end. I mean, they played him a little bit at the beginning of last year, and I know they kind of gave up on that.
That was odd. That was a strange.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah. But, you know, fourth year in the program with 3 years of eligibility left, I mean, you really would like to, man, you need some productivity out of him.
Right. My comment about Ahrensberger is not about him as much as it is Osafa-Mensa. I think Osafa-Mensa is a 2A, Ahrensberger is a 2B. In a perfect world, and Khalid Kareem is number one.
Yeah. No, you're
nice
right.
World.
Yeah. So probably, you know, Osafa-Mensa and Jean-Baptiste are a 1 and 1A kind of situation with Ahrensberger as the third guy in there. Gobira, I think he has the Viper skill set in terms of athleticism, but his length maybe projects to the big, you know, that's why I say I don't know. I don't know any of us can answer these questions. Yeah. We'll continue to ask them and it will evolve and it'll be fun to track. I just don't think we can say anything definitive at this point.
Gobira, the last time I saw him, looked like a shooting guard that was coming to play for Bray.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, I think unless a lot has changed since then, I would think he would.
I agree with you guys. I think 2024 is when you start to really anticipate that he emerges. And again, we talked about in segment one about 3-3-5. How does that impact, you know, how all these guys align? So I don't, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I have answers. I have suggestions and possibilities, but these are going to be questions that we're going to ask, as I said, up to and probably through the 2020
November. This is a question to be asked for the season.
Right.
VR Irish fan 22. The last two recruiting classes, we've seen Blake Fisher and Drake Bowen be the leader within their respective classes by recruiting players to join. CJ Carr seems to be taking that role for 24. How much more impact do you think it has on other potential recruits when that leader is a quarterback as opposed to a different position?
I think GR Irish, you're looking at it from how you view the quarterback position, but offensive linemen would look to offensive linemen to be leaders, defensive linemen. I don't think that, and it's great that CJ Carr is that guy. And I mean, I think it's pretty clear that he is, but I don't think that in the entire team dynamic that that's any different. You know, I don't think that that is any more significantly impactful than what Fisher did and what Drake Bowen did.
I think it helps a little bit more, just based on the nature of the position. Does Notre Dame need a ringleader at the offensive line? Probably not. Like, Notre Dame's own offensive line reputation does it for it. So it's just like, it helps, probably more with like the skill positions.
Yeah.
I think they probably pay attention to it more, than they would otherwise. But, somebody's got to do it. You need somebody in your class to do it. So that's the most important thing. The fact that it's a quarterback is like, you get a little, you know, 5-10% boost because it's your quarterback.
I was going to say, I give even a little more boost to that. I mean, Drake Bowen might end up being a much better player than CJ Carr for all we know at college football, but CJ Carr right now is a bit of a draw for every skill position player that you can talk to. He does affect more recruits in that he can affect receiver, running back, tight end, anyone fast.
He doesn't affect defensive backs, linebackers.
No, maybe not. Maybe not, but I get it. CJ Carr is a much more high profile recruit than Drake Bowen.
Fair enough.
So that's where I think if your highest profile recruit is a big recruiter, that's a big deal. It's kind of like whether you believe Brian Kelly and Marcus Freeman or not. Brian Kelly said, I want my best players to be my captains. Marcus Freeman said, I want my biggest players to be my captains. You know, like, it's, I think CJ Carr is the high profile guy. And okay, it helps.
True. So if Justin Scott commits to Notre Dame, then you want him to be the guy that leads the charge. I'm not sure that that's who he is or.
I want CJ Carr to lead the charge. I think CJ Carr is the highest profile. Since he's the quarterback, is the highest profile guy coming in.
Yeah, and it's like, it's because it's not just he's the quarterback, it's also his personality is naturally suited to do that. So if you can get those two things working in concert together, I think that's a good thing. I mean, like, they've had guys in the past, like, I think Drew Pine actually did a good job of this when he was a recruit.
We're not supposed to talk about him, Pete.
Sorry, but he was available and did a nice job. Everybody liked him. But it's like, how about this? Marquis Stepp did a really good job of this when he was committed to Notre Dame a long time ago. Obviously, it all fell apart, but you just need some kind of hub organizer. And it's when it's a quarterback who's also a top 50 player, you get a little extra out of that.
So it's important that the best player in the class, it's more important that the best player in the class leads the recruiting charge.
I think you get extra points for that. If it's a quarterback, that's even more. But it's like, if Justin Scott is kind of an introvert, like Eshaq Williams was very highly rated. Stephon Tuitt is very highly rated. Aaron Lynch was very highly rated. I don't think any of those guys would have been like, I'm keeping the class together because their personalities were not geared that way.
Profile plus personality.
Yeah. Personality's big. Like, yeah. And
position
there
is a bonus.
It's just like having Kyle Hamilton come talk to a safety recruit or having an incredibly successful safety like Julian Love come talk to a safety recruit. They want to hear from Kyle Hamilton right now. I think it just kind of, we're probably talking way too much about this, but I think CJ Carr is from central casting of college quarterback coming in and can make people, he can kind of get people leaving.
His backstory is like the central casting backstory. Like, what is Notre Dame looking for? Guys who want to set out on their own and write their own stories. Like, who's writing their own story more than freaking CJ Carr, whose grandfather was the head coach at Michigan? Like, that's a super easy pitch to make.
I don't know about you guys, but I have people ask me, do I think that CJ Carr will stick? It's like, yes. We don't have any inkling or any reason to believe that he won't. Nothing's 100%.
Yeah, nothing's 100%, but I would be surprised by that.
Inkling whatsoever that CJ Carr is not going to stick in Notre Dame. It's hard to imagine a guy more committed to Drake Bowen certainly was, and certainly Blake Fisher, the kind of guys that we're talking about here. Okay, question from Irish from A2. Which stat from the 2022 season was more surprising? Maris Leafau leading the defense in total snaps, or Tyler Butner throwing 3 touchdown passes and 3 pick sixes?
I figured the second one
is hard to do. The second one's hard to do. I figured Buckner for some pick sixes, though. I wrote about it in his preview every time I wrote about it, because he throws bad passes on third down under pressure. So I figured those were actually going
to
happen.
A 1-to-1 TD to pick six ratio?
There has to be an injury to that. So that's why that was there. If Tyler Buckner played the whole year, he'd have thrown 20 touchdown passes and 4 pick sixes. So see how I threw that one in there. He got another one coming to him. I would have thought Leafau could have led the defense in snaps. Maybe not led the defense in snaps, but preseason, we love Maris Leafau.
That's my reaction, that led the defense in snaps. Well, in August, that wouldn't have surprised us. I think what surprised us is,
in retrospect,
the inconsistency of his game and leading the defense in snaps. That's the surprising part. But 3 TDs and 3 pick sixes, you can make a lot of money with the odds on that bet.
I took a new perspective of Tyler Buckner when he joked about accounting for 7 touchdowns in that game. I thought that was very funny. I know he won the game and it was well done, but when he said, yeah, I accounted for 7 touchdowns too, I didn't really plan on. I thought that was a really good.
I think it was initially stated to his quarterback's coach, and Buckner can be kind of understated, so I'm sure it was delivered in a fairly droll way.
Yes.
good on him to be able to find light in the face of adversity, but also victory as well.
Play Like a Champ 7. Is there a player or 2 or 3 who could have the kind of spring practice that would make you reevaluate Notre Dame's 2023 outlook in a more positive manner? And I'm wondering if we talked about that position already.
Yeah, we did. But I want to throw in a few more names as well. By the way, I threw in the or 2 or 3. Play Like a Champ 7 said, is there a player? I don't believe in a player changing an entire outlook on a season, so I put 2 or 3 in there. The first one that comes to mind for me is Jordan Botello. And that's why I say the defensive line. I mean, it could be Tyson Ford. It could be Jason Anya. I mean, it could be Donovan Heinisch. I'm not leaning towards one over another per se. I mean, Gabe Rubio fully reaching his ability could be significant. Kiana Aina, a guy, emerging and playing really, really well on a consistent basis. So anyone up there, I don't know if you guys want to add anyone to those guys. The one that I would, I just said a whole bunch of names. I'll let you guys plug first or next.
I would say Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Basically, anybody who could make Joe Alt and Blake Fisher not look like they're superhumans would be a positive development, because that would mean Notre Dame would have a pass rush, is kind of my number one question for the team next year. So any defensive end flashing would make me reevaluate the team. And this is like, I feel like I'm projecting a trade in the draft and then who that team picks. But like, if somebody like Christian Gray has an awesome spring, so good that they can move Clarence Lewis to safety, that would also sort of make me think, ooh, okay, maybe the defense has a little bit more depth at the back end because their cornerback position is even better than what we already thought.
Yeah, I was originally kind of with you on the Ford Rubio. If you could tell me, like, man, Ford and Rubio, they might start for us if you said something like that. But I still think that's the jump from what do you have to, okay, they're pretty good. If someone said to me, we have to find a way to rotate Kaiser at will linebacker because we absolutely must play Jalen Snead on every play this year, That would be a reevaluation for me. If someone said Jalen Snead has to be on that field the whole time, yeah. We got to rotate Kaiser out there somewhere else at weak side linebacker, I'd think, whoa, now something's happening.
And I think it's interesting that I think you're in agreement listening to the guys that you're saying. I mean, we're picking all defensive players. You know, I mean, Don Shuler, if we come, first of all, I'm not sure that there's something out of spring that we are going to be privy to that will necessarily allow us or to coerce us into making that jump here. But all things being equal, like a Don Shuler really stepping forward at safety, but to throw out an offensive guy, Billy Shrouth. I mean, if it looks like, yeah. Wow, Billy Shrouth is definitely a starting guard now. You don't have to, you know, typically it's been, red shirt, dabble a little your red shirt freshman year and then start in your third year in the program. If Shrouth is a guy who can come out of the spring saying he definitely has to be one of the starting guards, you figure that a Kristofic, at least he has some experience. He's not going to be, I mean, he at worst, he's serviceable and he's probably better than that. If a Billy Shrouth emerges, okay, now you got your guards and you can go into the offseason, into August, feeling really good about your offensive line. Anybody else you guys would think of?
I mean, Sam Hartman would be nice to see him have a good spring.
Oh, yeah, that too.
I mean, I know we sort of bake in he'll be really good, but like seeing it at Notre Dame in spring would be significant to me.
I'm much higher on the receivers. I feel like last year we were very accurate on you guys need to understand these receivers are not looked upon highly by Notre Dame staff or by people that are evaluating wide receivers. I don't feel that way anymore. I think you're going to get a couple of hits out of the Merriweather, Colsey, Jaden Thomas. And of course, and I really like the Caleb Smith addition with Hartman because of the downfield pass catcher. And how much Hartman can throw it downfield with back shoulder and everything. I think you get good receivers out of those four. Then you have an X factor in Styles. And for the love of all that is pure and holy, you figure one freshman could maybe contribute at some point for Notre Dame's wide receiver core when they're enrolling early, right?
Yeah, definitely. And think about where, I mean, I'm just throwing this out there. Think about how Tommy Rees thinks about Jaden Thomas today compared to a year ago.
Gosh. And Deion Colsey.
Compared to August.
Buried. Colsey was buried.
Yeah, Colsey was cold. They,
oh yeah,
they did not have a high opinion of him, and that certainly has changed. Caleb Smith, absolutely, and the freshman that you're referring to, Tim, it probably should be Jaden Greathouse, depending upon where he is with his meniscus.
It doesn't even have to be September. Just those guys should contribute this year. You should be able to get something from the guys.
No doubt. But again, most of the guys that we're looking at are on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with just the development of the offense in 2022 and Mr. Sam Hartman.
We have a very obvious answer to this one. So we're all going to have to think outside the box after the obvious answer from Fanhood. You are Marcus Freeman and you're sitting in a 5-star living room. You cite one Notre Dame role model that has excelled both in the NFL and after the definition of 4 for 40. Who is that alum and why?
You're thinking about Justin Tuck?
Yes.
Which is who subscriber Jake Jensen, I believe, mentioned that. And that's absolutely right, Justin Tuck. Absolutely. I would go, I don't know that this would resonate because he's an older player, but I mean, you guys know how I feel about Bryant Young. And
I think we got to go younger for the resonating.
Yeah, I think right? So. I think so too. And I think it's kind of hard to do that. It is for me. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it would be Tuck, then Young. I would actually use Kyle Hamilton if he was willing to be used in this way. Because, you know, this was from Georgia, from Atlanta. Georgia is right there. Came to Notre Dame and I think did the 3 and out, but come back for your degree, which he's doing right now. Like, that's all like the story Notre Dame once said. I think Notre Dame is very comfortable with like the 3 and out, come back, get your degree story, like the 4 or the 3 minus 1 plus 1 for 40, whatever, however you want to make that math work.
Yeah.
That part of it, they're cool with. And like that's what I mean, Marcus Freeman says that. He's like, I want to sign first round picks. Well, first round picks very rarely stay in school for 4 years, and that's fine. But just, we're going to put you in position to get your degree afterwards. Exactly what's happening with Kyle Hamilton right now.
Three for 37 is fine. It's a lot of money if you get that right.
Three for 37 million. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
You know, Pete, you're absolutely right about Hamilton. And you know, we wouldn't say that if he had just had a typical rookie season, but he had anything but a typical rookie season. I mean, we're seeing rated the highest safety in the NFL, not just the highest rated rookie. He had a tremendous rookie season. And so, man, you push him to the front and shine a light on him, especially now that he's in class and will be on the football field in the spring, offering some constructive contributions to the 2023 team.
Yeah, I definitely think about Hamilton was one that came to mind too. That's seemed outside the box when I thought of it, but Pete explained why it is not outside the box. Then, you know, you figure, I mean, once again, this is kind of like that CJ Carr thing. Hamilton's a such higher profile than Drew Tranquil or Kyle Rudolph or even Harrison Smith. Those guys are great role models for this situation, but people know Kyle Hamilton right now. Heck, well, if you're Marcus Freeman, it's 2024. I'm going to talk about Michael Mayer.
Right. Zach Martin would be amazing, but like,
yeah,
he could use Stanley or Nelson or McGlinchey. Yeah,
we don't know the 40 part of it for those guys, but
Zach Martin's 40 is looking pretty good, I think.
How about, you know, I know he's an older guy, but Jerome Bettis, I mean, he came back this past
year. He's in the news too. That's a good one to bring up, is Jerome
Bettis. He's an extremely successful businessman. That's the part is like, you know, we don't hear about who are the the really successful businessmen. I mean, I could throw out again an old timer, but Stance Magala retired at age 49, and it wasn't because of the money that he made in the NFL. And I realize he wasn't an NFL standout, so there's some criteria that has to be met for the
4 for 28. That's a good job too. 4 for 28.
Yeah. Good slogan. Definitely. Okay, we have a question from Indy Squid 23. We're going to pop in back into basketball here. What are reasonable expectations for the Notre Dame men's basketball program moving forward? The consensus seems to be making the NCAA tournament 4 out of 5 years with at least one deep run through the ACC and March Madness during that time. One ACC deep run, one March Madness deep run over the course of 5 years is what Indy
as long as deep run is Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, right? That's a deep run.
Yeah, Sweet 16 is yeah, that constitutes. You get to the second weekend and you're among the upper echelon.
I don't disagree with this consensus. I could start
4 out of 5 tournament.
I could find semantics in here, but that's
yeah. I feel like I feel like it's a 2 out of 3 for me making the tournament, which is certainly
that's even better. That's even better, but.
No, that's not as good as 4 out of 5. What are you talking about?
No, it's even better. It's an even better way.
Don't you help your kids with their math?
It's an even better way of looking at it. Like, it was on our board. McCormick pointed out, like, North Carolina made the NCAA tournament 12 out of 16, Notre Dame, or 12 out of 17, like Mike Bray. I mean, it's very close. Kentucky misses tournaments, too.
Right. So I don't think people realize how much teams miss the tournament.
Also, to go to the Sweet 16, you do have to beat. Either you get lucky because you play a team that upset a very good team, and that's probably a pretty good team still, especially like how much parity there is, or you have to beat a 4 or 5 seed to get there.
Right. And I think
they don't allow everybody into the Sweet 16. It's hard to get there.
It's harder now to make it every year because the ACC is so average. I mean, Notre Dame finished, they went 15-5 in the ACC, and they had to participate in a play-in game.
That's amazing to me.
They finished second in the ACC.
That still annoys me a little bit.
That doesn't seem right, but they're using power rankings, and ACC just doesn't carry a whole lot of weight anymore. It's the SEC and the Big 12, and Notre Dame's not in either one of those, and they're not going to be in the Big 10. They're going to remain in the ACC, but yeah, it's harder than ever. I think the 2 out of 3 is probably the number that's a little bit, the 66% as opposed to 80%. Of the time, you know, maybe 7 out of 10, if we can expand it to 70% of the time, whatever that.
I mean, 70% seems reasonable to me. Like, if you, whoever hires the next coach, if he was here for 10 years, They made the NCAA tournament 7 times. They made the Sweet 16 twice.
Yeah,
and the Elite Eight
twice,
once.
Not the one. You need the twice, Pete. I think now 16, we're gonna get into semantics.
There were like 3 times, but yeah, point taken.
But I would be like, okay, I might not say like that's unbelievable, but I'd say like, that's a good job.
A Sweet 16 quality team can lose in the second round to another Sweet 16 quality team is my point.
Sure.
Oh, just yeah, like Notre Dame did.
No doubt.
It's a total crapshoot. Well, not a total crapshoot, but it's got some crapshoot qualities.
It does have some crapshoot, some crapshoot qualities. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. All right, second basketball question. We'll finish with a couple of footballs. Mr. Irish Red, what are the top three characteristics or traits you guys want in the next men's basketball coach? Yeah, that's the question. I put in a notation there for us. Go ahead.
Well, I can guarantee you one is he's going to be defensive minded, because that's how sport hiring works. When you get rid of a player's coach, you bring in a hard ass. When you get rid of an offensive coordinator that likes to run the ball, you bring in one that likes to throw it. When you bring in a 3-4, you bring in a 4-3. Notre Dame is going to have a young defensive minded coach come in. And if he's not a young defensive minded coach, he's going to be an old defensive minded coach, because the absolute separation of offense and defense for Mike Bray's basketball programs, as if they're somehow not related, doesn't make any sense to me. Doesn't make any sense to me that we went for 18 of 23 years with, we can't guard people. We just can't guard people. Yet you play everybody that says, yeah, they really got up and guarded us. You know why? Because half the game, you're supposed to be really getting up and guarding somebody.
Well, you have to play a deeper bench in order to do that.
Okay, right? Well, then do that.
I get it. That's one of my criteria, that you have to develop depth, and you have to play deeper into your lineup. I understand why Mike Bray favored that and did that many times, but similarly to football, like along the defensive line, you've got to go deeper into your roster now. Everybody's big and strong, and you get worn out because of the level of athleticism and strength and exertion that it takes to play the game.
And it's different. I get that Notre Dame can't rebound like North Carolina with what they can recruit, but you can still play defense like Virginia with what you can recruit, because it's a different situation than keeping Baycott off of your boards.
But tell me how you feel about this. I mean, Tony Bennett's a great coach and he's done great things and he won a national title, but do you want to watch that offense on a...
No, but they're just an example of a team that can play great defense that does not have North Carolina's talent all the time.
Okay. I would agree with that, but I would like a coach that has a team with a little bit more consistent offensive prowess than what Virginia shows. I realize he's great and has done great things. Pete, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I think O'Malley made this point in Monday Musings. Like, I don't need a defensive minded coach. I just need a coach that doesn't have a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's more balanced as a head coach. But that all would come after the energy and drive to recruit. That would be my first and second thing. And then a balanced head coach would be the third.
Totally agree with everything you're saying. Juice is what I wrote down. Energy, defense, but not Tony Bennett. Like, to the point where your offense, where you know, they won a national title, but a lot of times.
Yes, they did.
They did. But a lot of times they lose, and they lose early in the NCAA tournament because they don't have enough offense. And who do you really want to watch that? Just think about the reaction to that style of play. I know I can see.
You're asking me the wrong year. You're asking me the wrong year if I really want to watch Virginia play basketball.
I'm just saying. I agree with what Samson's saying. There's got to be a balance.
Yeah.
And part of it is approach, in terms of how you coach it, and the other part is you have to play more guys now. You have to trust your bench, and you can't. Cormac Ryan and Nate Leshefsky and Dane Goodwin are not physically capable of playing 36 minutes a game against the level of athleticism and strength that they have to play against.
Completely agree.
And recruiting, of course. I mean, I think you need a young energetic guy, and you have to You have to hammer the transfer portal. If that means predominantly most all are grad transfers because of the issues that Notre Dame's dealing with and bringing in undergrads, then that's what you have to do until you build up your recruiting base.
We're going to have to go down this road again, but when did these issues begin for recruiting undergrad transfers in basketball? Because Mike Bray revived his career recruiting undergrad transfers in basketball.
Well, the point is the young, energetic guy that you bring in to recruit, hey, undergrads, great. And you're right. He proved it in the past, and he did it with Notre Dame student athlete type players, right? I mean,
how would have his career started at Notre Dame without Ryan Humphrey and Danny Miller?
Yeah, Danny Miller was very significant from the outset. No, you're absolutely right. And Tim, you're absolutely right.
I mean, Trey Wirtz and Cormac Ryan are undergrad transfers. Right. They came in 150 years ago.
I like Humphrey and Miller, though.
I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, you want to talk about other underrated reasons why Notre Dame has fallen off? Ryan Humphrey is not on the coaching staff. Ryan Humphrey didn't have an opportunity. Well, I'm not really sure that they have the candidates to. Would he have made Matt Zona? He wasn't going to make Matt Zona Martin Gebben, but.
Okay, let's get back to what you just said. Recruiting is the only thing I care about. Next question. Matt Zona, Martin Gebben is what we're looking at here.
All right.
Martin Gebben became a player. It took 4 years for him to become a player.
And he was the best player on an injury-riddled team his last year.
He was good,
He was really, really good.
Changing ends left and right that year.
He could play offense. He could rebound. He had shooting range. He was really good.
He was terrible his freshman year. Remember watching him? You're like, what are you doing recruiting this guy?
Wow, he came a long, long way. And who gets the credit? I mean, that's got to be Ryan Humphrey.
Oh, well, and they do. I mean, Mike Bray has good player development. Let's not forget how Mike Bray's done a great job developing players over the years.
Big men.
Tim, your candidates, like I think you talked to, you wrote about this, but we haven't really talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm not going to overdwell on this. I think the two NBA candidates are Quinn and Sweeney. I don't think it's going to be either one of those. I think it's going to come more from the Pat Kelsey from Charleston, Darian DeVries from Drake, Micah Shrewsbury from Penn State. Maybe Bryce Drew from Grand Canyon. I know he had the awful last season at Vanderbilt, which leaves a negative impression for a lot of people. We put Jay Wright on the list, not because we think Jay Wright's going to come out of retirement and coach Notre Dame, but because we believe that Notre Dame was going to ask Jay Wright if he wanted to come out of retirement and coach at Notre Dame. And if they did ask that question, which I haven't followed up on, I'm assuming that he did or will say no to that.
Until you follow up and get a no, I am going to assume yes, because it makes days more fun. That seems like it'd be a good time. If Jay Wright comes out of retirement and coaches Notre Dame for no reason whatsoever, I would like that.
I DeVries, Kelsey, Shrewsbury, I think those are really, really good candidates. I really do.
I think they'd all be good.
I'm intrigued by each one of them in different ways. Kelsey's 21-1 at Charleston. Their only loss is to North Carolina at North Carolina on November 11th.
Well, if you can't beat North Carolina, I'm not sure what you're doing here as Notre Dame coach.
Shrewsbury, pedigree, great pedigree from the NBA and under Matt Painter. Kelsey, great pedigree as a player and a coach. I think all three of those guys are really good, very, very good candidates. I think Notre Dame can have success with any one of those three. Do you guys have any? Pete, I communicate with Brian Hamilton from The Athletic, and I think he believes it's Shrewsbury ultimately from that group. He had some other names on that list. Porter Moser from Oklahoma. I personally don't think he's going to leave Oklahoma's in his second.
So you get Ryan Humphrey back.
Yeah, no kidding. Ryan Humphrey, for people that don't know, he's on Porter Moser's staff at Oklahoma. But I don't think, Oklahoma's about to go into the SEC. I think there's a lot of money there for him.
Yeah, I don't know, because like Porter Moser is a more Midwest guy. I mean, it's I think more of a cultural fit hire. You know, there's a different in a different time where Mike Bray retires about 2 years earlier. I think Porter Moser would have been a serious candidate here. Maybe the time and place isn't where it needs to be. Right, Dusty May from Florida Atlantic was also a little bit more of a wild card candidate, but I guess I just sort of, I would like Notre Dame to find somebody who has had consistent success at whatever level they've been at. And I think Darren DeVries at Drake, they've won 20 games, I think 5 straight years. It's not like they've been unbelievable, like Greg Marshall at Wichita, in terms of like mid-major success, but he's had a consistently good program.
Well,
also you'd get his kid too, who's a really good
player. He scored 18 a game. Kelsey was successful at Winthrop and now at Charleston.
Yeah,
there's only one like his first year at Charleston. I think he went 17-15, but other than that, he's been very successful. Shrewsbury is just in his second year at Penn State. They were under 500 last year. They're better this year. They're considerably better, I think. It's hard to evaluate a Penn State basketball program, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
That's kind of incongruous in my mind with Penn State, but those are the guys. And if Martin Inglesby, I don't think that Notre Dame goes that route. I don't think that excites the fan base. If that plays any role in that, I mean, Martin's a hell of a guy and a very solid coach, but I don't know that the personality sparks any interest among the fan base. Okay, let's pop back into football. Dollar bills. Do you see any, quote, Benjamin Morrisons in the incoming freshman class? Someone that comes in, becomes a starter, and impact player as a true freshman. Aside from Hartman, which of the other transfers do you think will have the biggest impact on the team?
I think second part in Congress with Hartman, Caleb Smith can have an impact on the team. I think I jumped on this in the previous segment. That downfield acumen for Sam Hartman is going to play well with Caleb Smith. I think if Harper stays healthy, he'll have a good impact, big impact on the team. I think Caleb Smith is an upgrade to what Notre Dame had at receiver last year, along with what's coming back. I don't think Harper's an upgrade to what Notre Dame had at nickel last year, though. So that's why I guess I rank him behind Caleb Smith. And then, of course, Jean-Baptiste should be number two behind Hartman.
Yeah, Harper's would have been a good answer for the spring practice performance that might change how you view it. Thomas Harper has a great spring, you'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's just like finding another playmaker in the back five or back six if they're playing nickel or dime. Like that would change a little bit about how I saw Notre Dame and its potential for this season. But, you know, the Benjamin Morrison is tough because I don't think we would have, I'm sure that we didn't mention him in any January podcast last year, nor do I think we mentioned him in any April podcast last year or June podcast last year. But as soon as training camp started, that's when you started to hear about him. So it's,
well, he didn't,
I don't know who that would be.
He didn't arrive till June.
It's just like, he wasn't somebody that the coaching staff, like when I heard in the press box, like this guy might be the best corner we've signed in 10 years. I heard that like before the Ohio State game. It wasn't like in April and May when we talked to our sources, I didn't hear a lot of like, just wait till Ben Morrison gets here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, nor did we. I mean, to make an exact comparison, since Morrison didn't arrive until June, I would throw out the name of Brandon Hillman, who was very impressive throughout the entire week at the Polynesian Bowl. And he will not arrive until June as well. So is that right? That's correct, right? He's not early entry.
That's correct. Yeah.
Now, one that is an early entry, Christian Gray. I mean, maybe he is a guy. Tim, you had mentioned him earlier.
Yeah, he's, despite the fact that he's joining a group that has Benjamin Morrison, has what we assume will be a healthy Cam Hart, a veteran in Clarence Lewis that you're not easily replacing in a lineup. But as Pete mentioned, maybe Clarence Lewis has some positional versatility. Christian Gray is the guy that you could show up and they'd be like, wow, no one gets open on Christian Gray. That is a possibility too. That's what I think that would change. That's another guy to change my mind too.
And I think there's enough athleticism and just athletic talent in Jeremiah Love to come out
Yeah.
Again, not arriving until June, but you could see, you know, kind of like, well, like Jadarian Price. Now, he was an early entry last year, and he impressed right away. But, I mean, you could, because of Jeremiah Love's just athletic ability and skill, I can see him being a guy. But he's not really at a position of tremendous need unless you, you know, use him in the slot a little bit more, something along those lines. But yeah. Hillman doesn't survive until June. And, you know, we're always talking about safety.
I did not mean to omit Jaden Mickey's name. He's also will be a much better player as a second year player than as a freshman.
No doubt about it. And thanks for bringing that up. Okay, last question. And I had my list of NFL candidates, but I'll go ahead and ask it, Tim. What are your predictions on this is from Matty Heaps, 14. What are your predictions on where the Notre Dame guys will be going in the NFL draft? We're in the early stages of that. Tim O'Malley has taken over responsibility of NFL draft stuff, and he wrote the recent story. So, Tim, let's start with you.
Let's start with, I think we all expect Michael Mayer to be drafted this season into the NFL and in the first round as well. So Michael Mayer, I mean, I think Foskey's the next off the board. Don't you guys agree with that?
Yes, definitely.
Yep. And then Patterson, and then definitely Patterson is the next off the board for me as well. It's almost the most obvious 1-2-3 we've had in a long time. NFL GMs or NFL draft Knicks or some combination of all of them are higher on Brandon Joseph than probably all three of us, right?
I think that's going to change.
Yeah, I could see that. But right now.
But I mean, in what way? Like, are we going to get higher on him or are they going to get lower?
No, Tariq Bracey is going to impress them more than Brandon Joseph.
I was about to bring up Bracey. If Tariq Bracey runs well, and you got to run well because there are a lot of good cornerback options out there in college football to go to the NFL, plus a lot of guys in that league that can play. And they go to places like Southern Illinois and Western Carolina and any other college you want to name. There's plenty of corners. But I think Bracey will be a better pro than Brandon Joseph. Does he get drafted ahead of Brandon Joseph?
I think so. I mean, I realize that you're right. They're going to look at everybody and they're going to test them in this and that and this and that. But when they pop the tape in, they've got so much film of Tariq Bracey shutting people down.
Making plays. And
yeah,
plays too.
I think Tariq Bracey has a chance. We're not at the stage of projecting rounds yet. But
except for Mayer. I project Mayer to go in round one.
Yeah, well, that too. And I would project Foskey going no later than round two.
Right. I agree with you.
And, you know, Patterson's an established, I don't know that his injury situation. I mean, hell, the fact that he played through the injuries he did this year, I think would be a real bonus for him. But I think Tariq Bracey, wherever somebody might have him projected right now, which would probably be near the end of the draft, I think he's going to go higher than that.
Yeah. I wonder where Bracey will go just based on what O'Malley said, because like there's a lot of bad tape on him too, but like it's all earlier in his career. Yeah. I could see GMs being like, you know what? I see this other Tariq Bracey from Southern Illinois who's an inch and a half taller and a hundredth of a second quicker. I'm going to go with that guy. I could see Tariq Bracey not being drafted, but then sticking in the league for a while just because he was just a super efficient player. Like corners who can tackle, it's hard to find them sometimes. That's a minimum in the pros. So,
yeah.
Patterson, I'm really interested in because, like, what's the value for interior offensive linemen? I don't know. It's like whatever team needs them. Like, I think Jared Patterson probably will get drafted later than we think he should, but then be a multi-year NFL player.
I'm going to spice up this podcast here right now. I will bet you, Pete Sampson, $100 that Tariq Bracey gets drafted.
No, I'm definitely not taking that bet. I will bet you
$100 that Tariq Bracey is drafted within the first. Name that tune within the first
round. There you go. $100 on the line.
Done. Sold.
Five rounds.
First five rounds.
I could say six, but I don't think you'd take that.
No, I wouldn't take
rounds.
All right. Let's go for it.
I am not betting. Will Jason Adamiola, sorry, I apologize to the 5 years of us being told the wrong way of speaking, Kurt Heinisch. Will he be drafted?
I don't know. I don't think Justin will.
I don't think so either.
I, you know, Jason has the size factor. I mean, you love the motor and you love the, he's a hell of a football player, but
I would like to see a team take a chance on him in that seventh round, though, because he's a heck of a football player.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, he's definitely in somebody's camp, and
he will play. Okay, Jason Ademola will play in the NFL. I will say that.
I wouldn't disagree with that either. I wouldn't disagree with that either. I would love to. I would love to be in a film evaluator's film room, watching Josh Lugg the last 8 games of 2022.
He'll play in the league too. I just don't know if the draft pick happens there or not. I would, yeah, I think Josh Lugg will go in the seventh round, actually.
What about Bo Bauer?
He won't get drafted. I don't think he was ever going to get drafted with the injury. Multiple injuries.
Yeah. He'll get a shot. I mean, guys like that.
Well,
guys
he's guys going to camp and playing special teams.
No doubt.
If he's healthy enough, he makes the team. My God. He's not healthy enough, he doesn't make the team.
He could, you know, on maybe not your Isaac Rochelle projection, but he could stay in the league for a long time just playing.
I'm not making a projection like that on Bauer because I think medically he could easily be disqualified from playing within his next injury.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you think about these guys that we're mentioning as potential lower draft picks?
I kind of go back to like Kirk Heinisch went undrafted. Ian Williams went undrafted.
Wow.
Did Romeo Okwara went undrafted? Like a lot of good college players from Notre Dame have gone undrafted. So
Lugg seems to have a why don't we bring him into our camp though feel to him for sure.
For like, sure. Oh, 100%.
So many spots, so many ways he can help.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's a long, long way away, but I feel like in general, we always sort of overvalue Notre Dame, the draft position of Notre Dame's players, other than like first round picks, just because we don't know who's playing at Western Carolina or North Dakota State.
Right. And most guys in the league are not drafted necessarily all the time. Right. I mean, you know, you're in that 50-48% range where a lot of free agents make it, man.
Yep.
Very long podcast there, Jack Freeman, right? Very long podcast. We're going to wrap it up here. It's not because we want to deprive people of a long podcast. It's just how podcasts are listened to and not listened to. So we try to keep them a little bit tighter, but we had a lot to say today. We had basketball to talk about and we are going to come, we will be back next week, but be prepared for a Wednesday, February 1st podcast, because on Tuesday, January 31st, Justin Scott will be making a decision, or we expect him to make a decision. So we're going to push this back one day to either lament his decision or celebrate it and talk about trying to hold him, keep him in tow until signing day in December, which I believe is December 20th, a Wednesday. So that's it today for Irish Illustrated Insider. We appreciate you joining us. We'll talk with you next week.